All right, welcome to another episode of Ubuntu Radio. I'm in Durham today on a rainy Monday. On a rainy Monday in the fall, those familiar with the Durham scene or the Triangle North Carolina scene probably have heard the name Pierce Freelon. He was a candidate for mayor of Durham, one of the youngest candidates, an African-American gentleman. I don't know, maybe I'm Barack Obama. I don't know. So we're going to get into that. But I'm here with Mr. Freelon because I thought he's an interesting interview. And in Ubuntu, we try to tell the human story. And I think somebody at your age, and how old are you?
33
years old, who has aspirations to do this in this sort of political atmosphere, post-Obama, post-racial, because there is no racism. There's none of that. It's all in the past. Trying to step up to that reality in postmodern America. Somebody, I want to find out, with all the ish that's going on, why, how, when, and, you know, how much more will he continue to do? So, again, gentleman's name is Mr. Pierce Freelon, and, I mean, we're going to spend some time talking to him, but I'm going to let him introduce himself at this point.
Cool. Well, thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you for agreeing to do this, man.
Yeah, no, I heard the show name, Ubuntu. I said, okay, that's what's up.
Yeah, some black stuff, you know. We try to get the brothers and sisters out there to talk. So, where did you grow up, man?
I was born and raised here in Durham, North Carolina. Grew up in a house about two blocks from here on Trinity Avenue. And
where are we to get people situated in Durham? We're sort of downtown or a little bit off downtown?
Yeah, we're on the edge of downtown. We're on Gear Street, which is it's close to an area that, you know, has transformed radically in the past.
Let's say the word gentrified. It's been gentrified. Some white folks in Durham downtown.
Yeah. Well, not just downtown. I guess this would be the outskirts of downtown. This used to be a predominantly black neighborhood. Coco Cinnamon, which is a coffee shop, opened up on the corner. Then the music venue, Motor Co. Then the craft brewery spot, Full Steam, came in, and that was it. That was a critical mass for an explosion of development. Church right now. This used to be Praise Tabernacle Church. My parents bought the building a couple months ago and intend to develop it into a spiritual kind of arts activism healing space. And this was where our campaign headquarters was grounded. We're trying to make sure that as Durham gentrifies, there continue to be spaces that uplift marginalized voices and our creative spaces where we can envision futures different than what the trajectory that we've seen. That's also one of the reasons to run for mayor, just wanting to make sure that the future we inherit is different than the one that we've got now.
So mom and dad, obviously, seeing a certain vision to, like you said, buy this property, this church, having a space where folks with the same intellect, the same passion, the same, I guess, aspirations for changing this community to what it should be and could be, they see that. Obviously, they taught you that. How active were they as you were growing up? And obviously, I'm assuming what you saw led to the idea, well, my parents are active. They taught me to be active. I can do something to change what is going on now. What did you see in Durham growing up?
What I experienced growing up in Durham is going to baseball games and seeing Bull Durham, the movie, and watching the scenes. You know, in my neighborhood, it was going to Centerfest, which is a big cultural arts festival, and Bembe Festival, and Kwanzaa Fest, and the American Dance Festival, and the culture of Durham was, it was vibrant. And in ways that I didn't realize until I left Durham and was seeing what the rest of the country is like, seeing what the rest of the world is like. it really engendered a sense of gratitude for what we have here. I'm just thinking about like impactful memories from my childhood. It would include things like going to see Bobby Seale, who was a co-founder of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, speak at B&D Duke Auditorium at North Carolina Central University, introducing me to the Black Panther Party and that whole Black Power movement that I wasn't learning about in social studies class at Durham School of the Arts. It was something. It was a deeper narrative that was coming to me from my grandmother, coming to me from Kwanzaa, and coming to me from, there was a bookstore on Fayetteville Street called the No Bookstore, K-N-O-W, and that sold alternative books and bean pies and fried chicken. We used to go there all the time. My grandmother especially, she used to always take us and was trying to entrench us in our history and our heritage, and that's easy to do in Durham. My brother Yusuf Salim, who's an amazing composer who helped my mom launch her jazz career, a Muslim brother in a very strong Muslim community here in Durham. All my babysitters growing up, for the most part, were Muslim women. So there's the No Bookstore, there's North Carolina Central University, there's Kwanzaa Fest, and learning about the principles of self-determination and collective work responsibility and unity and creativity and faith and purpose. These are the various Kwanzaa principles. Umoja, Ujima, Kujichagulia, I'm learning Swahili. So, when I got to college and I had the choice to study French or Spanish, which is what I learned in high school, I chose to study Swahili because I was familiar with a lot of the words from my childhood here in Durham, in this Pan-African community that we have here. So these were all seeds that were planted that grew and are bearing fruit. My babysitter wasn't plopping me in front of the TV and, going to cook, collard greens and then checking on me once every 2 hours. They were taking us on campus. We were engaged in the community. We were going to the bookstore. We're chopping it up with the Nation of Islam brothers with the bow ties, with bean pies. Like, this is the upbringing. This is the culture. This is the context. And so, yeah. And that's just one side of it. There's more to that story, into that narrative, with the schools and the arts and the activism and organizing groups that I was involved in and my parents were involved in and my friends were involved in, and recreational stuff, soccer teams and basketball camp or Duke at their Zenith, and so spent some time on that campus as well. Spent some time in a Catholic school, which where I was the only Black kid in my class, at Immaculata, as well. So there's all that. It was a part of the narrative and a part of my experience and helped shape my worldview. So when I was, threw my hat in to run for mayor, all of that was on my mind and on my heart, and making sure that as Durham continues to grow, it grows in a way that is not only about maximizing profit, but which is what it has been in my opinion, but is about maximizing our culture, maximizing access and opportunity and sustainability and equity. These are like the principles that were ingrained in me. And when I see the city that I love, veering in a direction that is not consistent with the values that I cherish, then there's an obligation to step up and to shape the dialogue around how we want to grow. And that's why, that was one of the main reasons why I decided to run.
And I'm in denial, and it don't take no x-ray to see right through my smile. I know I'll be on the go, and it ain't no drink out there that can numb my soul. Oh no, and all we want to do is take the chains off. All we want to do is break the chains off, man. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is take the chains off. All we want to do is break the chains off. All we want to do is...
All right, so I'm here with Mr. Pierce Prelon, candidate for mayor in Durham. Primaries were last week. Unfortunately, we didn't make it to the next round, but we're chopping it up today on Ubuntu Radio because my assumption is that that run was a test because this community is growing. This community is going to get to the space where I think the ideas that are in your head are going to be seen by people who have that same vision. I don't think demographically right now it was ever going to happen. So, I mean, was that a reality going into this? Barack Obama's first attempt at being a senator failed, but he learned. What have you learned? Because this is not done. I'm looking at you. This is not done.
Yeah.
This is not done. So what did you learn so that the next time or the time after that, I mean, I'm going to be talking to the mayor of Durham. I think that's what this is.
Appreciate that. Speaking into existence is definitely something I believe in. You can manifest the reality that you, you know, that you're building towards. And so, yeah, I mean, I've learned that that campaigning is
dutty.
Yeah, and it's heavy. It's 24/7.
The lectures were last week. When did you start?
Yeah, it was. Well, it started at the beginning of the year, January. You know, I had been thinking about running for political office for a long time, about a decade. But you know, I'm a parent. I've got an 8 and 7 year old. I run a business and a community center. I travel around the world doing creative projects, and there was a lot of work that needed to be done to ready the ground. I'm also a professor. I teach at UNC, and so I had to talk to my department chair, like, I'm taking the next year off, you know, so I can invest my energy wholeheartedly into this work. I talked to Josh Vincent, my campaign manager, about building the team. We had our communications team out of DC that did our website and logo and was helping us get our visuals and branding stuff intact. We had a communications company that we brought in to do our video, like our launch video. There's a photographer. I needed photos that were professional, that looked, you know, other than outside Instagram, that could be a part of that branding package. We had hired a fundraiser. So there's all these pieces because it's running a full operation, it's running a business. And then we launched in April. And then from that day, every day, from the moment I woke up until I went to bed, with very few exceptions, all day campaigning. Is going to community events. This summer we were in the projects, the biggest public housing community in Durham, MacDougall Terrace, doing free lunch Tuesdays, building with community organizers, talking with kids, and knocking on doors. On the other end of the spectrum, I'm at the golf club luncheon where they're doing a fundraiser for breast cancer, you know, with the teeing off on the golf course, and, you know, meeting with those folks and everything in between, from the school, going and talking to kids at schools, filling out questionnaires, doing candidate forums. And then before we do a candidate forum, there's a whole, like, debate prep process that we went through here. And, you know, having my campaign manager on one side, my finance director on the other side, and our field director throwing questions so that we can anticipate the types of, you know, dialogue that will be engaged in, and making sure that we're staying on message. I'm an MC. I know how to speak.
Is there anything you don't do?
I know how to address a crowd, but it's a different language and skill set to be able to articulate a vision in the 60 to 90 second block, which is the time limit they give you on these forums. I mean, there's so much study, research on policy, and understanding everything from waste management to policing to zoning and development. A lot of that stuff took a lot of study. You know, I know how I feel about violent policing, over policing in Black communities from an intellectual level. I've read all the books, the new Jim Crow, and I understand what the issues are, but it's one thing to levy a critique, it's another to offer a solution. I met with the police chief, I met with the city manager. That research piece was a real heavy part of the load.
We've been lovers on a mission. Oh,
on top of that, also being a dad and finding time to be with my family. Also, my dad was diagnosed with ALS this year, and I've been trying to spend, you know, whenever he asks me to do something, the answer is always yes. Doesn't matter what's happening. I always go and help him with some little thing around the house or whatever he needs, even if he just wants to play chess. So, you know, there's that aspect to it as well. And then something that I learned, here's something I learned, huge learning actually, was self-care. If you don't take care of yourself while you're grinding hard, you won't be able to do the work that you've been called to do. So it took a few months for me to understand that rest, eating, and sleeping and meditating are as vital as the research and other things, because this is not just about running the campaign, this is about living life. We all have different strains and demands on our time, and if we don't prioritize self-care, we can't do what we need to do. And what may seem like a waste of time in something as simple as taking a nap, it actually, you know, gives you an abundance of energy to do the work while you're awake, you know, at a higher level than you would be able to just going hard, you know. There's this narrative around going in and going hard and hustling that is about never sleeping and going, you know, until the wheels fall off. That's not a healthy narrative. There has to be some kind of balance so that you have the strength to be able to do better every day. And that was another thing I learned with the campaign, is that you're gonna make mistakes, you're gonna slip up, you're gonna struggle and have tough days. But the goal is, and some Josh and I talked about all the time, is just every day to do better than you did the last day. It's to learn from your mistakes. If you fall down, it's to, you know, dust off and keep moving forward. It's a real privilege to be in Durham, and it always has been. The difference is that that now that is more attractive to affluent millennials. It's risks displacing folks who have been here laying the foundation and the groundwork for the culture to be able to grow and be incubated and thrive and bear fruit. You know, there are folks who aren't from around here coming in, gorging themselves on the rich soil that we've cultivated here. You know, it is the obligation of those of us with power and privilege and access to make sure that our culture is preserved and not erased in the process of this new influx of new folks. It's not just gonna happen if you leave it to the chance or to capitalism. You know, we'll see play out in Durham what's happened in Brooklyn and a lot of places that have been radically transformed at the expense of the locals. That story of gentrification is, I mean, what was it? Monday of last week was Columbus Day. The original gentrifier. He rolled up on a place where there were already people, said he found it, and then told all his friends, come through, like, look what I found. You know, there were people there was civilization, there was culture. It was like, move, we're coming in. We're buying cheap, selling, flipping territories. And so we only need to be students of history to see the trajectory, because when those colonists come and set up shop, it inflicts violence on the bodies of the people who've been there and need to be displaced. Holy mix up, a holy year in Durham, we had over 800 evictions every month.
Month?
Every month. 800. Because people are being displaced at alarming numbers. And that's violent. You know, getting kicked out of your crib. Now you got your kids have to figure out what their new school district is going to be. You're integrating into a new community. The poverty is being ever more densely concentrated as folks are being pushed out of houses that are being flipped. Folks' property taxes are skyrocketing. They can't afford to live in the place where they've been forever. And they're on a fixed income because they're elderly and they can't afford the extra three, the triple, you know what I mean? Right. That they have to pay the city now. And everyone's saying,
progress.
You know? And manifest destiny. That idea that this is our destiny. We're going to continue to grow. And what happens to the people? You know, violence is what happens. And you know, the hindsight allows us to have wisdom in making sure we don't repeat the same mistakes. We can look back and say, what could have been done differently? How could we have grown in a way that was inclusive of the indigenous population, that was inclusive of the immigrant African population, and not just exploiting those mm-hmm. groups? And then investing money into the slave patrollers to keep you from rebelling from your, you know, forced removal. That is the history of the United States. And because we haven't had a serious dialogue about it, we are at risk of having history repeat itself. Gentrification is not colonization. It's not chattel slavery. But I draw upon the metaphor to show that the overarching mechanics of capitalism are at play in both scenarios and have similar effects. And so we can learn from one to create solutions and think creatively about a different future. That is, I think, the primary obligation of a public servant. It's to be visionary and to create policies that create the best outcomes for the most people.
The question is, are you going to run for mayor again?
Of course. No doubt. I'm a Southern North Star. I be the light in the dark. Be the right in the wrong. I be the reason the Bull City feeds me. Bull City grease me. Bull City needs me. Everywhere I go, I got that Bull City greeting. That's why they throw the horns when the Bull City sees me. It's the North Cat, baby. I'm a boss. Carolina barbecue sauce with the slaw. I'm the safe, the cellar, and the vault. I'm the best, the effect, and the cause. I'm the law. It's the North Cat, baby. I'm a boss. Carolina barbecue sauce with the slaw. I'm the safe, the cellar, and the vault. I'm the best, the effect, and the cause. I'm the law.
You've also mentioned some other hats that you wear. You're a professor at UNC. Okay, you're an MC. I'm not going to ask you to five fingers to spit some bars here, mm-hmm. but we might get there. I think, again, Ubuntu is about the person. We've seen Pierce Freelon, the politician, the community activist. For me now, if you got the time, it's about you, the person, these other hats that you wear, the world traveler, the dad. Obviously, we talk about your mom and dad, obviously, who seem to be dynamic folks who played a pivotal role and in the community that they build around them, their friends. And I'm sure if you're going to hear Bobby Seale talk at Duke, if the parents are not taking you, somebody with a similar view as them is going, you know what, Pierce are like this. And mom and dad don't even think, they don't even think about it. They're taking Pierce over there and that's all cool. So it seems that we have this community of folks who are shaping the individual that you are to accept that you can be all these things. And I think, you know, sit back and go, I can't. I don't see as a guy that goes, I can't. You wanna be mayor? Why the hell not? I'm gonna try it. I'm gonna be professor. Yeah, I'm gonna go to Senegal. I'm gonna go to West Africa. I'm gonna see all this. I'm gonna talk about it, and I'm gonna drop an album. You know, whatever it is. So you have all these things, all these hats that you wear, all these possibilities in you, and you're free to express them. Why do you think that is? and why, basically, why are more brothers not like that?
That is a deep question.
We're a deep show.
I think that the reason we're not more brothers and sisters aren't open is because of the way our culture limits our capacity to imagine.
From where I am to wherever you are, shine your light for the world to see, for the world to see.
Shine your light for the world to see.
My umi says, shine your light on the world. Shine your light for the world to see. My abi says, shine your light on the world. My umi says.
The way education and society operates, it's to create obedient servants, right, in the system that exploits people. Get a job, good job, create some safe scenarios for yourself. Yeah, part of the reason that is even a conversation we have is because of the idea that our security is threatened when we express ourselves in ways that are a true reflection of our inner light. It's a scary concept, you know, that something about you is dangerous and prohibitive for you to be able to engage in employment, you know, like something like your hair or the color of your skin. That's the same reason people change their names, you know, so that they can assimilate. That's the desire that fear that I can't assimilate is you know, it's coercive, you know, and it keeps people from taking risks and for stepping into their purpose at the expense of doing something because it's a safer thing to do. And so I think back to Harriet Tubman, you know, who was famously quoted saying, I freed 1,000 slaves. I could have freed 1,000 more if only they knew they were enslaved. Now, that's deep.
What do you teach at UNC? Because you said, if we're following the Harriet Tubman quote, you know, there's 1,000 metaphorically of us who don't even know that we're still enslaved. So you have an opportunity to get them when their minds are open to possibility. So what are you teaching at UNC now?
I've been at UNC since 2009, almost 10 years I've been teaching at UNC. And I've taught a lot of classes, Blacks in Popular Culture, Politics and Cultural Production in Africa, Hip Hop History. I've taught Ghanaian Society and Culture. In the music department, I've taught MCing lab, I've taught a beat making lab, music and political movements, a lot of different types of classes.
What's the response been from students when they're delivered something that is classical, but in a way that speaks to who they are right now? So what was that response like when you first started, and now 10 years, has response changed from the students? Like initially, were they like the first time I heard Stuart Scott say Booyah on ESPN, like 1990, I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? So it took me a minute. It took me a minute for my ears to go, that's where I come from. And it's okay for, there's a language where I come from to be in this public form, this public arena. So you're at the institution and you're speaking about MCing, or you're speaking about these other things. Do the freshmen kind of look at you? Does it take them like a month to go, it's okay, I can talk like this, and it's considered education?
But yeah, I think there's a certain extent to which, not only because of my orientation from an academic standpoint, I'm a scholar of Black history, Black music, of hip-hop, of Pan-Africanism, and hip-hop as a Pan-African art form. But also just being a younger black man that they don't know if I'm a student, first day of class, and they're, you know, they're like, oh, you're a professor? Like, you know, and so there's definitely a sense of this isn't my first period bio lab,
right.
know. And then there's an uncoupling of what I know to be traditionally intellectual, academic, and what I'm observing here. And then there's eventually a reconciling of those two worlds is not mutually exclusive, but one and the same here and therefore in me as well.
So I'm assuming you're not singing mumble rap.
No. But, you know, mumble rap has its place. I mean, people talk a lot about lyrics not making sense, and I say, well, when's the last time you deciphered a Missy Elliott verse? You know? Say act dumb like duh.
As the drummer boy go brrrup a bum bum, give you some of that Cinnabon. Is it worth it? Let me work it. I put my thing down, flip it and reverse it.
It's poetry. And so-called mumble rap is also black poetry. Just like Richard Wright, just like Nas, just like Langston Hughes, just like Richard Pryor, just like Muhammad Ali, just like James Brown. That is all a part of our cultural expression. And every generation finds what the kids are into to be very problematic. And at a time, it was, what are these young guys, Public Enemy, doing, was the critique. And then it took the Spike Lee, who was also, what is this young filmmaker guy doing, to say, yo, I'm with them. And this whole generation is with us. And we're going to go in regardless of what y'all talking about. You know, and then it took Quincy and others, you know, a decade to be like, oh, okay, so this is actually legit. Well, Quincy's a bad example because he was on board very early. But there were, you know, there was a lot of folks of in the 80s who were looking at Run DMC the way some hip-hop snobs are looking at what they see as like a lower, you know what I mean? It's black art. It's beautiful.
Add a little sugar. Such what a style. The joy of children laughing around you. These are the makings. I do it for the forefathers
here, the street artists. Who are you with right now as an MC, as a lover of culture, folks that are ready to push not just music, but culture forward? I'm Donald Glover, I'm with Issa Rae, I'm with
Donald Glover, certainly multifaceted, multi-talented.
The guy who recognizes black genius, man.
Genius. Issa Rae, for certainly. Ava DuVernay, you know, Blackish. It's a great show. As is Queen Sugar, musically, J. Cole, Kendrick Lamar, No Name Gypsy. It's an amazing MC out of Chicago. She comes out of the Chance the Rappers clique.
Went to heaven, the police going to, yeah, they're going to. Hello, operator, emergency hotline. If I say that I can't breathe, will I become a jawline? Up to see the movie, line up to see the act. The officers are scheming to cover up their cover up their. Ask me no more questions. Protecting is stealing babies' lives. I'm very black, black, black. Can't send me back, back, back. You take my
breath. I'm digging where the culture is shifting. Solange, Jay, and Bay. All of them put out classics in the past year. With Lemonade, 444, and A Seat at the Table, which was like, for me, the theme of our campaign, The Seat at the Table specifically. You know, and then on the Jazz side, Kamasi Washington, Robert Glasper, doing some amazing things, connecting intergenerational energies. Mm-hmm. Tribe Called Quest with their, you know, return with Five Dogs passing was a significant expression. Then like Migos and Future, some of these guys who are just killing it, Bad and Bougie, and you know, so you hear some of these songs in a club somewhere and just the electricity in the room is, you can feel it in the air, and that's pop, you know, that's popular music. It's tapping into something in the now that is beautiful and cosmic and powerful. When Donald Glover won his Golden Globe or whatever, he was like, shouts to Migos, right. Bad and Bougie, you know, like there's no distinction between what he's doing with Redbone and with the, you know, his whole Afrofuturist, like he's Childish Gambino's dropping a new album, we're expecting bars, he's singing funk songs, right. And he's shouting out mumble rap from his highest pedestal.
One of the biggest critiques between an older generation, and there's always going to be a critique from the older generation, is that they ain't saying shit. They literally ain't saying shit. But you're absolutely right. It speaks to a certain energy in the culture that they're trying to express. So one, what do you think that energy is? And if we can't even understand that, and I'm talking from an older head, literally what is being said? There's something being said,
but
we don't even know what it is. So what is being said?
So here's the thing, and this is where it's important to have that intergenerational lens. If you don't understand it, it's because it's not for you. That's all.
Fellas!
Yeah!
A brand new funk.
Tell us about it.
Brand new funk.
Yeah, all right.
If you want to get down with a broad,
all right.
This is the way you do it.
Tell us.
Walk up and rap to it.
Uh-huh.
Put your hand on the lower left arm.
Come on, Adam.
You know?
Yeah.
And this is what you rap to. Come on like you should. Come on with you. Come on.
Yeah.
There are people who grew up on James Brown that, even if you don't literally understand the words, you understand what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nobody questioning how articulate he's dictating those lyrics. Ah. The comedians that joke about it. James was the original mumble rapper.
That's a very interesting statement.
And nobody's, you know, because they're feeling it, that's acceptable. But these guys over here, though, they ain't saying nothing. That's the critique. What did James sing about? Sex machine? You know, I want to touch myself? You know, damn, I look good. It's a man's world. It's patriarchy. It's capitalism. It's sex. That's the Godfather's soul.
Right.
Same thing that they're talking about. Same thing. Having fun. Getting spirits. Enjoying a good libation.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's certainly some elements of violence and drugs. And I'm not saying that it's all well and good.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, though, isn't with the mumble rappers, it's with the label owners and the people pushing the industry that work to deny a diversity of voices. And they've seen that this kind of song yields a certain kind of profit, and they wipe the slate clean to maximize their bottom line at the expense of our cultural diversity and our creative integrity.
And I think that's also part of it, is that when you said the industry is doing this, the industry is pushing a certain style and fashion that it's not representing the diversity of black thought, black culture, and what we can present to the world. I don't think it's stated, but part of it, what I hear is just, y'all got some money now. Don't y'all understand what is being done to you? Y'all know this, right? Don't y'all see that you are being exploited and you can, you have an opportunity to say something else, why not do it?
Yeah, well, we're making money.
Right.
And it's kind of like, you know, football players, you know, levying the critique when they're no longer in the game. You know, Hattie McDaniels said, I'd rather play made than be one. Black humiliation, black violence has always been profitable because the consumers are primarily white. And these are the images that they find most comfortable and entertaining. Black nuance, black thoughtful, you know, there's an audience for that too. It's just not as big as the one for that other stuff. You know, until we own the distribution channels and until the multinational media entities prioritize a bottom line larger than money, we will be constantly at the mercy of the folks pulling the purse string.
It may be tough, Tracy, because I think you also identify the need for folks like Migos and Future and all that to have a space, because we cannot go backwards at a certain time. But I get the sense there's a certain musical or intellectual legacy that you ascribe to, that you follow. So who are the people that you see offering something?
But it's all the people we mentioned, you know, No Name, Cole, Kendrick. The thing is, kids are listening to them, and kids are also listening to mumble stuff. J. Cole went double platinum with no features on his sophomore album. That's astounding, you know. Kendrick Lamar makes over $1 million every performance he does. Every stadium he rocks is netting over $1 million. That's people are listening. The thing is, again, just the way that the business of it works. The folks with their hands on the levers of what gets seen and heard and what doesn't, they profit from exploiting degrading negative stereotypes about black folks. And they always have. It's always been that case in the United States of America, selling black popular culture to a predominantly white audience. Like the sexual exploitation of black women specifically is consistent with a narrative that is foundational to the institutions of slavery and its continued legacies. With black women as vessels for children and to enhance the mode of economic growth in the South. The same reason they strap cattle up and pair with a bull, they thought these human beings were animals and were breeding them. And therefore, black woman's body as a sexual object is ingrained in the psyche of this culture, not only as a sexual object for producing chattel property that enhances the value and the productive capacity of a plantation, but also as sex slaves for them to play out all their wild sexual fantasies that they may not be able to openly embrace in the puritanical white Christian context. This is part of the psyche, it's part of the narrative, it's part of the story of this country. And when you have entertainment as a reflection of the broader underlying elements of that culture, you know, in that period it was minstrel shows, and you constantly saw women in a couple of different lanes. You're either a mammy or a Jezebel or whatever stereotype. Those same stereotypes exist today because that same hierarchy exists, with white heterosexual Christian men at the top and black
women
at the bottom. A lot of sisters doing a lot of dope stuff, a lot of queer MCs, a lot of, you know, there's a lot, but those aren't the narratives that are most comfortable to the primary consumers of hip hop, which are white men, boys, teenage boys. They're not checking for as much for Rhapsody as they are checking for the same stereotypical image of black womanhood that has been reinforced in their eyes for generations.
After speaking so eloquently about the marginalization of black women, their histories, their legacy, and their contributions, is your mom still alive?
Yeah.
What do you want to say to her right now?
I would say, I love you. Thank you. I would say, your boy is gonna struggle on your behalf. And use what privileges he does have access to stand in solidarity with your struggle. That is the key to getting free. It's, you have these privileges, and are you willing to put yours on the line for our collective freedom and to get out of the way so that the most oppressed among us can lead in ways only they'll know how to.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I struggle to reconcile getting to a place where we're all free, where the types of privileges I grew up with become the standard for everyone.
What are some examples of those?
Well, I would whittle it down basically to three things. And this is, Maya Angelou volunteered these instructions to me about 10 years ago. She said, we need three things. Clean and well-furnished schools, safe and non-threatening streets, employment which makes use of our talents but does not degrade your dignity. You got a job, pays a living wage with benefits. You got a community that is free of violence, and you have a, you know, well-stocked space for you to learn things and think critically and build on your imagination. And that's what freedom looks like to me, as dictated by my elder, Auntie Maya. I grew up with those three things. Work, safety, education. And a lot of people don't have that. Everyone should. Those should be basic human rights, and they're not.
I'm cold. Yeah, I got the right to put up a fight, but not quite. Cause you cut off my light, but my sight is better tonight.
So the next mayor's run, or the governorship, or the dreadheaded president of the United States are all for momentum to creating that reality. Obviously, I have the intelligence to do it, the ambition, the passion to do it, a history of those who came before you, folks that influenced you. He said, Auntie Maya, to be able to sit down with her and get these three nuggets of wisdom, that's got to be a powerful, powerful memory, and also a powerful blood coursing through your veins that gives you life. Literally, blood gives you oxygen, and every day you have three bits of oxygen coming from you from a legend, not just as a writer, but as a human being in terms of living, again, that thing that I enjoy more about, the best aspects of black culture, is living our genius. We have survived and thrived in spite and despite anything from Columbus to Trump. And we will continue to do that. And I think your willingness to give up comfort at the beginning of the year, and I'm sure we could have had another discussion about what that conversation might have been with his significant other when you said, I'm going to give up this scholarship at a, you know, at the institution to come and, you know, throw my hat into this thing. But, I mean, you wouldn't be doing it if she wasn't behind you, the family wasn't behind you. And you wouldn't be doing it if you didn't think there was some possibility at the end of it. Maybe not this November, but in Novembers to come. So one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you to hear a little bit about that, and I certainly did hear it, and I'm hoping the listeners on Ubuntu Radio heard that. And again, the name is Pierce Freelon. You're going to hear that name over and over in the future. We're going to speak it into existence, and he's going to act it actively into existence. I have no doubt about that. I think what you've heard for the last couple of minutes or however long you've been listening is an elegy and is a love letter, I think, to Durham. And I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that spoken enough. Or maybe I'm one of those people who doesn't give myself access to the spaces where probably these conversations do happen. I'm going to change that. I'm going to be in this city more often. But I'm starting, more than anything, it's not the place. Wherever you are, it's the people you're with. You can be in the middle of hell if you got some good people around you. It ain't so hot. And the coolness that y'all bring with the conversation and the vibe makes the heat of the situation irrelevant. And I say that, you know, figuratively, because of what is happening in our country now, the heat that's being generated by the devil himself. And we can go there, but we won't, because I'm not going to give him the time. What I really want to accent is folks like yourself who, and again, we could go into, was Barack Obama an inspiration? I'm sure there's no way it cannot be. My son is 14 years old now. He's a freshman in high school. The years before this, he knew one thing. He knew one president as a black man. And I'm sure there is some kid who you saw at a school that shook his hand and probably were not, might not have even been thinking about it, but he saw a young, dreadheaded man who was speaking some sense about policy and ways to improve his life every day on levels that he will not know. But I'm sure that had an effect on him. And so I have no doubt in all the different areas that you're touching from emceeing, and you better take us out with a couple lines, man. You better take us out with a couple lines. But from emceeing to scholarship to beat-making lab all over the world, that you're touching folk, but you have a message to deliver to the world, and I'm hoping that you get the opportunity to do it and you continue to do it. Are you going back to the institution, going back to scholarship, or this is it? Politician for life!
Well, I've always had one foot on campus and one in the community, and I think that will continue for sure.
So day to day, where are you now?
Right now, I'm just at Black Space. You know, I've been running the campaign, and we were hoping to make it into the general, which didn't happen. So this month, I'm just setting up for January of next year. We're weighing our options. There's some opportunities to get more involved in some local political stuff that I'm considering and talking over with my wife. So there's no next step. There's no concrete next step in this moment. I think we're just kind of weighing our options, and we'll be making some decisions about what the immediate next step will be in November. I know I won't be teaching in the spring of 2019.
Okay.
Or sorry, 2018. The earliest I would be back on campus would either be summer or fall 18. Time now to weigh those options.
What is Black Space, and where can people find out more about it?
Black Space is downtown, though we will start doing programs here at the church as well. You can check us out third Tuesdays at BU Cafe. We do an open mic. We do a cypher every Friday night, downtown Durham. A cypher is just like a circle of MCs and poets, singers, instrumentalists, beat makers, mostly high school students. Black Space is it's an Afrofuturism like community center. Talked earlier about running a black business and running a black makerspace. It's a digital makerspace for kids. But yeah, if you have a 14-year-old or know someone middle or high school age would be interested in getting involved, you can just go to theblackspace.org to learn more about our programming. And of course, you know, you can come check us out at one of our events.
Well, can we check you out here? Can we drop a couple bars for the people at Ubuntu Radio? Take us out, or tell me where we can go to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
Freelon.
I mean, we did I performed yesterday with my band, The Beast. And you can check us out, just The Beast Music, no funny spelling, just The Beast Music. You can find all of our music. I was thinking about, oh, what am I going to spit? And I was like, you know what? I brought Auntie Maya into the space with her poem, And I think maybe hearing the rest of the context for that, for those three principles, mm-hmm. would be a good way to end things off. She said,
young women
of color, we add our voices to the voices of your ancestors who speak to you across vast seas and impossible mountaintops. Come up from the gloom of national neglect you have already been paid for. Come up from the, I think, sting of irrational prejudice. You owe no racial debt to history. The prayers of our bodies, the blood of our bodies and the prayers of our souls have bought for you a future free from shame and bright beyond the telling of it.
Free from shame and bright beyond the telling of it. We pledge ourselves and our resources to seek for you clean and well-furnished schools, safe and non-threatening streets, employment which makes use of your talent but does not degrade your dignity. You're the best we have. You are all we have. You are what we have become. We pledge you our hearts.
We pledge you our whole hearts. May it stay forward. I am my Angelus.
Bars.
Any words for the youth out there? All of that.
Spiritually, man, thank you very much. Come on back to Ubuntu Radio. We have folks who are ready to talk and share and deliver truth to you the way this gentleman has. But for now, Ubuntu Radio is out.